Welcome back to My White Belt. This is Jim. Thanks so much to everybody who tuned in for our first episode last week and for all the great feedback. You guys have been so incredibly generous. Today's second episode is a conversation with Professor Shane Mount. Shane is a black belt. He runs Rain Jiu-Jitsu in Boise, Idaho. And I have to tell you, this was my first interview, and it felt like Shane and I had been friends for years. So I hope you get a lot out of this conversation, and let's just dive right into it.
Do you love that your last name is Mount?
Nobody believes that's really my last name. I've had to show so many people like my driver's license. They're like, that can't be your last name because you're a jiu-jitsu guy. And I always respond, if I made up a last name, it would be something cooler like Omoplata or Kimura.
Yeah.
It would just be Mount.
But it'd be funny if somebody was talking to you and they had had enough of hearing whatever you had to say. And they were like, sorry, I have to escape Mount.
That was a first. No one's made that one yet. That was good.
Oh, good. My last name is Trick, like trick or treat is my real name, which means middle school sucked hard.
Yeah.
Like now it's cool. Like I've grown into my name, but yeah, Mount's a great name for a jiu-jitsu teacher.
Yeah. When I was in the military, so your military ID reads last name first. So every morning I would come through the gate on base and they'd hold the ID and they're like Mount Shane and they would giggle and I'm like, yeah, I've never heard that before. Good one. But so now it's cool.
Once every couple of years, somebody who puts Jim and Trick together, they turn it into Jiminy Trickett and they think they're hysterical and they're heartbroken when they find out that they're not the first person to say that. So you've worked both with law enforcement and you were in the military?
Yes.
So what tell me which of those feels more interesting to you?
Very different. I get this question a lot from like students of mine. I think the demands of a day-to-day law enforcement officer are actually higher. And I know I'm going to catch some flack for that. But the difference being, when you go to a deployment in a remote location or a combat situation, you're there with a bunch of other guys who are going through the same thing as you, and you're kind of all handling it together. When you are a patrol officer, you see the worst that society has to offer. And then when it's time to be done, you're supposed to clock out and return to your normal life, whether that be your spouse, your children, your training partners, and you're supposed to just somehow or another decompress and be this happy-go-lucky guy at your kid's soccer practice again, despite whatever atrocities you saw that day. So I think the day-to-day of being a law enforcement officer is much more difficult, just trying to balance and deal with your own mental health. And for me, at that stage in my life, jiu-jitsu was such a huge part of that to kind of offset the ugly. As you know, there's no happier place on earth than being on the mat.
And it's the best.
Right. Like a bad day on the mat is still better than a good day off the mat. Mm-hmm. So I've been really preaching this a lot lately, that if you are a law enforcement officer, you have to seek jiu-jitsu training for your safety, one, but two, just for your mental health, because we're not doing a lot for different officers and different agencies to counterbalance what they see every day.
I train up here in Massachusetts, and a bunch of my teammates are police officers, detectives, former military, and I've been training close quarter combatives with a handgun for the last couple of years with one of our jiu-jitsu guys, who is a former LA Gang Division detective, former Marine, and just wrapped up as a homicide detective. And we begin every class with him showing us a horrible video of something that somebody is up against. And the last couple of weeks, it's been police officers in dire and terrible situations. And I'll spare the details because this isn't that kind of podcast, but no, that makes a ton of sense.
Now, you were raised in a martial arts family. I read in your bio that you actually had a black belt in judo when you started training BJJ. So this is how you were raised. You came from a judo family. Is that right?
my parents, my grandparents, my cousins. Oh, that's just what we do. And I honestly thought that was what every family did because it was so normal for us. And then I realized later that that is not the normal. In high school, you know, I tried out for the soccer team just because I wanted to do something different. And I didn't understand the rules of the game because I didn't grow up doing anything other than judo. That was it for us.
So my dad was in the Navy for 22 years. And while he was there, he studied judo at the Kodokan. And I'll put a picture of my dad in the show notes so that people can check it out. And I'm not able to find it quickly to show you, but there was no world in which you ever got close to getting anywhere with my dad while you were wrestling him, even though his training was, you know, in like, I think the late 50s, just outside of Tokyo. So you're sort of, do you even remember a time in your life when you weren't grappling or doing some kind of martial art?
No, I have no, I mean, a couple of years ago, I used to write this article for the BJJ Weekly, the online magazine. And they asked me kind of a similar question once. And they're like, well, what about when you're deployed, you know, 6 months away? And I remember being deployed and they had these little yoga mats everywhere in this workout tent. And I convinced a couple buddies to tape them all together. And I started even grappling while I was gone, teaching my friends basic things, because life without jiu-jitsu or judo or, and that's another thing. I don't like to separate the two. I'm very like, judo is jiu-jitsu and jiu-jitsu is judo. It's we're all just grappling. That's really it. You can find some really old Kosen judo stuff and see guys in the 40s and 50s doing an outside hook or a de la Riva guard long before any of this. So grappling is grappling. And that's a topic I ran on my podcast about this all the time, about the division within our community is it's really, really not good. And we should embrace everything.
We had a 19-year-old trial student last night who has never done jiu-jitsu, but she has 8 years of judo.
Yeah, and she knows things.
Yeah, I'm like, do you know Kesa? And she's like, yeah, I know Kesa. And she like, I let her put me in side control. She transitioned to Kesa. And then I showed her a couple arm bars from there. But it's like her body mechanics and movement, it's just so similar to what we do.
Absolutely. I've got some young guys because I'm out here in Idaho now. And wrestling is a big thing here. And I wrestled in high school. Again, I tried out for wrestling in ninth grade and all the other kids had been wrestling and, you know, peewee wrestling. And I just jumped in. So these kids who have grown up wrestling, I have one student, he's a state champion. I asked him, when did you start wrestling? He said, I think I got my first pair of wrestling boots at 3 years old. I was like, man, if wrestling had a belt system, you'd be a several degree black belt by now. And it's exactly what you said. Like, I remember his first class, which was almost 2 years ago now, he's a blue belt. And I went to sweep this kid. And he didn't realize what was happening, but as soon as he was off balance, he just corrected and bounced right back up like one of those like inflatable bop it clowns. He was just so body aware.
Yeah.
And pressure didn't bother him. Connection didn't bother him. He didn't understand what was happening in the transitions and the positions, but he knew where he should be. He had a certain grappler's instinct. And so I think if you're coming from judo to jiu-jitsu or wrestling to jiu-jitsu, I haven't encountered a whole lot of sambo guys. I've trained with a few here and there, but never like in depth. But yeah, if you're grappling, you understand connection and where you're supposed to be. Yeah. I also had a former student who was a yoga instructor. She was in her early 40s and tiny little woman. And I didn't expect her to adapt to jiu-jitsu so quickly, but her level of body awareness and balance in her core and just, it was amazing to me.
Yeah.
And the more I think about this, before I get off like on a weird tangent, if you watch videos of animals fight,
yeah,
they don't strike each other. Yeah. So grappling is the most natural form of combat there is, whether you're talking about two crabs in a pot or snakes, or very few animals strike each other. So my school is called Rain Jiu-Jitsu. Our mascot is a lion. And I just spent hours watching videos of lions hunt, how lion cubs are trained through like playful rolling. And I'm like, man, this is what we're designed to do as humans. And I know that this isn't going to be a final video podcast, but you're looking at me right now as I wave at you, this little mechanical device, this hand, this was never designed to be a war club. So right. To strike someone with this and break all these tiny bones, this is not efficient combat. But what we do with our bodies, man, that's incredible.
Yeah, this is the point my coach makes, is that most civilizations throughout history, whether it's the Greeks or the Romans or the Native Americans, there's a wrestling component to culture. Absolutely. that we love. It's like we hunger for it. We had at our school. So our school up here in Massachusetts is, you know, on the small side, but growing and sort of a club mentality. And we've been going for a little over 4 years, and we just had our first woman sign on a few months ago. And it really cool. And now we've got like an influx. We've got a bunch of women that are coming to grapple. But even in like this conversation with her, we're like a school where we've never trained with women before. I was asking her what she liked about it. And she's just like, I love the wrestling. I love that physical connection that you have to somebody. And, you know, one of my curiosities about you that I was hesitant whether or not I was going to ask it just based on like your demeanor and your energy as you showed up. But I was going to ask you if all these years later into it, you still love it. And you actually, one of the first things you said when we jumped on this program was, there's no happier place than when you're on the jiu-jitsu mat. So for somebody who has been doing martial arts his entire life and now does it professionally, you still love it as much as you ever have.
Sure. I'm going to be honest with you, because I love your account and your content and what you're about and the conversations we've had leading up to this. I love jiu-jitsu 100%. There are days I don't want to go. There are days I don't want to go to work and I don't want to teach. And right now, black belt's like, I can't believe he said that. But they feel it too. You know, there are days where, so my girlfriend has a little girl. I love spending time with her. She also trains, but sometimes we're playing and I don't want to stop playing because I'm loving that moment. Or I'm a big car enthusiast and I'm working on one of my pieces of junk and I look at my watch and I'm like, oh, I got to take a shower and go to work. And I wish I could just finish this. Some days I'm just tired and sore and I'm not happy, but you put on that face and you go give your best anyway. But yeah. Just because I love it doesn't mean that I don't also want a day off. I've actually, so our academy is 5 years in this location. And I'm finding myself taking more and more advice from my instructor, Hobson Moore, you know, 8-time black belt, legend. And him and I, we have a very close personal relationship outside of just student and teacher. And he's always telling me like, Shane, you got to get some days off. You also have to let, you know, some of your purple belts teach some classes and that's an important part of their growth. And you have to give up some control and you do need to enjoy your family and your time. And he's always telling me, get a bike, read a book, do these things. And because I obsessed over jiu-jitsu, like a lot of people do when they first join. And it is easy to get burnt out. A couple years ago, I was teaching in California and I had just totally burnt myself out. I was teaching 6 to 7 classes a day and private lessons and working with local law enforcement agencies. And I was just jiu-jitsu lifestyle. And I got to the point where I sold the school to two of my brown belts and I was heading back to Texas. I was going to be a cop again because that actually sounded like it was going to be easier than what I was doing, which is crazy, right?
Well, and
long story short, it didn't really work out how I'd planned. And somehow or another, I ended up here in Idaho and I just started teaching jiu-jitsu part-time inside a karate school until I could be hired as a police officer here. But that it was only like a month from when I sold my school to when this happened. And I realized if I do anything other than teach jiu-jitsu, I'm faking it because this is what I'm meant to do.
Yeah. And
it took me a while to figure out that like even Michael Jordan, you know, probably the greatest player or Kobe or anybody you want to pick out, like there are days they didn't want to go to practice, but it's not about whether you want to go. It's about do you go even when you don't want to go? That discipline and just people are counting on you. Even as a white belt, people are counting on you to go to training tonight or tomorrow, whenever your next session is, because they know you're going to be there and they're going to give the appropriate drilling partner behavior and the reaction. And, you know, like you, even as a white belt, are probably more important than the black belts in the room, because you're the foundation of that organization.
Mm.
That's the most important part. So yes, I love it. Sorry, that was a really long answer to a
No, it's good.
I love it, but I don't want anyone ever to really get on themselves and feel like, man, I just need a day off, or there's a time and a place for it. If you have a competition 30 days out or something, my days off may consist of no live training, only drilling, or light situational rolling with partners that I trust. Or a Sunday where the academy is closed, I might like take a walk or a bike ride or something, but it's okay to not always like, oh, I need to go. Like that's normal.
And then as a gym owner, and your school looks amazing. How many square feet is your facility?
It looks bigger than it is.
Oh, okay. It looks.
So we are, I want to say the building itself is 3,700 square feet, and our mats are just shy of 2,000 square feet.
It's pretty big.
Yeah, it's big. But I figured out the tricks of the wide angle lens. So and everything's white too, which, you know, white mats, white walls, white everything. So that it gives it that bigger feel.
There's not only the taxing.
It's not that big.
What's the class is not that big.
When you have a full kids class with 40 kids out there, like I had last night, that mat's not that big anymore.
Yeah. All right. Cause they're everywhere. It's like wrangling cats. The, that's a really good point. And I think it's probably really helpful for brand new white belts to hear a professor, a seasoned professor who actually loves this so much and feels like it's what you were made to do. And also that sense of, man, sometimes you just want to give your body a break, hang out with your lady and work on your car. And that's an important part of life. But the other thing that I would imagine that's pretty taxing when you own a gym is dealing with all of the different personalities. Because anytime you get big groups of people together, there's going to be some weirdness.
Yeah. So we had to lay down some ground rules. So I've owned a school in Florida, California, and here. I get like geographic ADD, and every couple of years I move away and start all over again. I don't know why I do that, but it's the adventure thing, I guess. But when I got here, I opened this school during and I'm not going to make your podcast political because I'm apolitical, but it was during the election campaign time for Trump's first presidency. And we had some very strong opinions about things that had nothing to do with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And I had to just grab all of my people and sit them down at once. And I said, here's how this is going to work. We're going to pretty much operate on barroom rules. I don't care who you pray to. I don't care who you vote to. I don't care who you sleep with. As long as you're a good person when you're here and you take care of each other and you're showing up here to get better, then I love you. If you are not here to do any of those things, if you have an agenda you need to push or something, I need you to do that somewhere else. Because this isn't for that. This is a place of learning and growing, and everyone should feel comfortable and safe regardless of your religious or political beliefs or sexual orientation. Or it's not acceptable to not feel comfortable, especially in a place where you pay to be, you know.
100%. Our coach kind of makes the point, and depending on who's in the room, sometimes we're a little bit looser with it, but when we're on the mat, we're talking about jiu-jitsu. That's what the conversation is. And to your point, I think this is one of the beautiful things about jiu-jitsu, and particularly for people who have never ever tried it, because they think for one reason or another it's not going to be right for them or it's not going to fit in. Man, there's something unusually unifying about this, isn't it?
Absolutely. When I first started the school out here, I did the all white geese thing, And some people were like, man, I want to wear this blue or this whatever. And now I let people, you know, as long as it's the IBJJF approved, because I pick my battles. But growing up in a judo environment, in the dojo, everyone was wearing a white kimono and that was it. And it didn't have patches all over it, and there weren't all these brands, because it's just a uniform. It's just the packaging that you put yourself in to learn the art.
Yeah.
And I have very unpopular opinions, and I get crap on my podcast all the time because I think there are too many like white belts who are worried about the new show your role gi drop instead of, can you pass the guard? Can you survive?
Yeah.
It's a really weird phenomenon that, and it's, I don't want anything, I'm unpatriotic, but we as Americans, we have a strange way of screwing up something that's pure and beautiful sometimes. And martial arts is supposed to just be that, about going there and show up, get tired, get better, improve yourself, improve everyone around you, and learn.
Yeah.
And somehow or another, whether it be like social media or whatever, we start to turn things into like fashion show or
you
know, trying to one up each other. I remember being at a San Francisco Open years ago and seeing all the AOJ guys come up. And I have a giant Guilherme Mendez man crush. Everybody knows I put that out. He's a wonderful, wonderful human. And some of the best private lessons I've ever taken when I'm in the area, I stop in every time. But I remember seeing guys who were so proficient, like reverse de la Hiva and Bay and Bolo and all these positions, but then they couldn't pass the closed guard at the white belt and the blue belt level. Mm. And I started like saying, that's what's wrong with what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're looking for what's sexy and what's cool instead of what is strong and like fundamental. And because all the other sexy, cool stuff comes later. But if you're focused on the wrong thing, from the kimono to the technique, you're already there for the wrong reason.
Yeah. My coach, his name is Liam McGowan, black belt, awesome. And like a pillar in our community, just a great guy. And he has a bunch of things that he says repeatedly. And one of them is that advanced jujitsu is basic jujitsu done over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, 100%.
And you know, the way that our school operates is Liam only wears white gis, and in his ideal world, he'd love a white gi school. It's not a hill for him to die on. And like, you know, we have some like very loose etiquette rules. We tend to not tie our belts when we're facing each other, tend to not tie our belts when we're facing the flag. But there's none of these rules that are like any level of concrete. It's more of, if you hang out for a while, you're going to pick up on these things. But wear whatever, get whatever gi you want to get, and just make the place where we draw a line in the sand is the training, is the focus. And it sounds like your philosophy sounds very similar to my coach. So then how do you what do you do, especially in the age of YouTube and Instagram, where, you know, you can get tutorials on every crazy heel hook, knee bar, helicopter arm bar. And then you've got somebody who's like 6 months in with one stripe on their white belt, and you don't want to crush their enthusiasm, but you want them to be walking down a road that's actually going to serve them.
It's a tough, tough line. So one thing that I say all the time is YouTube is not a sensei, right? Like it's, you can learn from it when you have achieved that level of understanding of jujitsu. I think by the time you're like a deep in your blue belt or your purple belt, you've experienced enough things that you can pull prior knowledge and then you can apply what you're seeing. But in the beginning, something like, you know, like the Kazushi, the off balancing or the grip might be off by an inch. And so while you're just doing this nonstop, YouTube's not watching you and saying, hey, move that grip or adjust this position. And so it becomes very dangerous because you get in quality reps of an incorrect practice, and one that may not work or one that may endanger you or your training partners. So I tell all my people when they're new, and I'm like, look, the internet is out there. Like, I can't keep you off of it. And I'm not telling you don't learn from other people, but I'm saying right now in these beginning stages, just eat what I put on your plate, right?
Yeah.
As your appetite continues to grow, I'll put more and more on your plate. And then there will come a point in time where you can decide what to put on your plate. But like right now, just eat what I give you. And then companion, I tell every person who signs up at my school, go on Amazon tonight, type in Jiu-Jitsu University and buy the book. It is the Bible of Jiu-Jitsu. I don't know if you have it.
No, I'm writing it down right now.
It's amazing. So it's written by Kevin Howe, who is a very great, most like humble, normal black belt guy you'll ever meet. He's down in Long Beach and he's an Altos affiliate. He's a good friend of mine. And he did the writing, and the material is from Shanji and Salo Habiro, who legends in the sport.
Yeah, yeah.
So Kevin has such a great way of taking what they're saying. And I think he's also like a literature professor or something of that variety. Mm. So he made it into information that you can understand. And so the very first chapter of that book is titled Survival. And if you're a white belt, your only job in jiu-jitsu is to not die. We don't expect you to beat anyone, right? Like, and you just are supposed to not die. And if you tap 10 times tonight, you should try to tap 9 tomorrow. That's it. Just one degree of progress.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's, well, I tapped 10 times last night and I tapped 10 times tonight, but I didn't look like, you know, Bambi on ice during the warmups. Like cool. That's progress. That's so survival as a white belt, just focus on, because it's like, if you go tonight and you go to like some academies have an all white belt class, and I don't have that right now. I used to, but if you're the baddest white belt in the room, who cares? Like it's not that big a deal. Like, did you help anyone? If you are better than everyone, then cool. Let them pass your guard. That way you can work on what it feels like to be inside control or neon belly or whatever. So like, as a white belt, focusing on winning is really, really short-sighted. And then scouring the internet for new ways to win is also really short-sighted, I think.
I completely agree. And I have this conversation with a buddy of mine started training a few months ago. And like the first couple of weeks, he's like, yeah, I haven't beaten anybody yet. And I'm like, we don't have a white belt class. And he's literally rolling with some really good purple and brown belts and blue belts. And I'm just making the point that's not how this works. And if you measure your early days by how many people you sub, it's going to be so demoralizing and frustrating.
Yeah. And we got to look at what the martial arts was intended for. Like I'm a big martial arts nerd. Right. So,
And you've done a bunch, like you've done Muay Thai. I read your bio.
I got a little bit of experience in some things, and not because I want to be like Steven Seagal, the world's most dangerous man, because I'm intrigued by it. Like I truly am amazed. So like you brought that up, I trained Muay Thai for years, and then I started training with like European style kickboxers, the Dutch style and the Germans. And I'm like, man, this feels more like my Kyokushin karate background, the ideology behind it. And it all fascinates me. And so you can train at my academy and be like, man, they do a lot of, I don't know, like X guard or whatever. Like that's my personal thing. And then if I come train with your professor, he's got his style to it. And so like, I think if you just learn everything, do everything. And like, and then the Bruce Lee thing, like, you know, learn everything and reject what is useless and keep what is useful and just flow, you know, like that's what this is all about.
I mean, look, I'm 6 feet tall. I weigh 228 pounds as of this morning, down from 430 pounds at one point in my life, which is another story for another day.
I saw some pictures.
Yeah. I used to be a very, very large man. I never played sports. And look, here's what I have to do. I have to like train everything. I have to train everything. And then I have to find the things that are going to really work for me. And your game emerges. But I'm curious for you, because you have such a depth and breadth of experience in teaching, for people that are in their, like, let's say their first 6 months of training, what are the consistent either techniques or ideas around techniques that if you could wave a magic wand, and you would say, okay, 5-month-old white belt, now you can do these couple of things and they're going to help you survive. Your only job is to survive. These things are going to help you do that.
do some silly stuff, put your feet on their hips, grab some sleeves, like try a spider guard, try some things. And if you get your guard passed, like laugh about it, slap, bump, get up, do it again. But that comfort level from learning to connect and learning to move and adjust based on what's happening to you, instead of just this theoretical close my guard, posture them down. I don't know about you, but like my forearms, have you competed yet?
Well, it's yes, I have. So I've been training for 4 years. I've got 4 stripes on my blue belt. And for my
white
first
belt earlier, I knew you were a blue belt. We talked about
it. Yeah, no, that's okay. The platform is my white belt,
right.
Which I started when I was a white belt.
Right.
But I just have to say, okay, I don't want to cut you off, but I have to tell you that, like, yes, I have competed as a 2 or 3 stripe white belt. And I pulled guard and I burned my grips out.
Yes.
That's so hard.
That's why I asked.
I was like, by the time my second match came around, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my coach and my friend and my girlfriend. And I'm like, I can't even move my arms because I got these deep collar grips that weren't doing jack. And I was so terrified to move from that position. And when I was done, I don't know that my arms, I don't think that my body has ever hurt or felt. I was like, am I ever going to get the use of my arms back? And thank God, by the time my next match came up, but I got my butt handed to me because I did exactly what you're describing. I got the guy, my pulling guard was great. Got him in my guard. And then was too terrified to do anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I see it all the time. I just had a young guy, he's a law enforcement officer. This kid is in incredible shape. Lifts, cycles, whatever, like just young, good looking guy. And I'm like, oh, this guy is going to be dangerous. So he did his first, and he's a monster in the school, but he goes to the tournament and he does the same thing. And the first match goes his way, but he hits the gas pedal and like, he just overexerts. Right. And then the second match, he doesn't look good. And he loses that one. And before the third one, he was like, professor, I have nothing left to give. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to finish what I started, but I'm letting you know now, I have nothing left to give. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose this fight, but I won't embarrass you by not going out there.
Wow. And
I was like, dang, like that's crazy. But I thought back to it, and every tournament you see it, you'll see like some coaches like massaging people's forearms or whatever. I tell my people right away, like, I love y'all, but I ain't rubbing no one's forearms. You manage your own, you know, like that's not going to happen.
My coach doesn't even want to shake your hand when you're not on the mat. He like doesn't want to touch anybody. I can't imagine my coach rubbing anybody's anything.
Yeah. I'm such a germaphobe too. And people are like, what a strange profession for someone who is so big on personal space. Like I spent a brief period of time in Sicily. I was just telling the story last night and it was so weird because I got some training in while I was there. And it was just so weird to me to have people like kiss me on the cheek, you know, like that.
Oh yeah. No.
And I know that's a cultural thing and it has nothing to do with sexuality or whatever, but like I grew up in a, it wasn't normal for me. So
yeah,
I don't, yeah. So like at our academy, everyone has to wear a rash guard. Like, it's so weird to me when I see guys bare chested in training. It's like that Along Came Polly scene where they're playing like basketball on the sweaty chest.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So yeah, but back to the tournament thing. Like, yeah, that's why I asked if you competed. Cause I wanted to ask if you felt that post first match lobster claw syndrome where you all you can do is kind of pinch and it'll still happen even to this day. Sometimes I get caught up in like a hard roll with one of my buddies and then I get in the car and I'm like, oh man, I drive a manual. This is not gonna like, I need my arms to work. So like even at black belt, you can still do stupid white belt things like forget to meter your breathing or we're not susceptible to falling into the same traps too. I think that's a giant myth is everyone thinks at black belt, you have all the answers that you don't make mistakes. No, we just are better at hiding our mistakes. That's really it.
I can't get over how much overlap there is between the way Rain in Boise, Idaho operates and our school. So Liam came in. And so typically what has happened over our 4 years is we'll spend a month on something. And that's kind of like the focus, right?
Yeah.
And Liam came in this January and said, we're going to do it a little differently this year. This is going to be the year of the open guard. it's going to be the year of the open guard. He goes, we're going to do everything that we're going to do all the, we're going to do all the things, right? But by the end of 2022, I want our school to be known for our players having a really solid open guard game. And so I probably hadn't looked at Delahiva or reverse Delahiva. I hadn't looked at those guards in, I don't know, with any seriousness in a couple of years. And the last time I tried to do it, none of it made sense. And I just couldn't make anything work. But now, even our beginner group, we are doing, you know, when you're warming up and you're having people do knee slicing, right? We're doing fit-ins where they're getting that reverse Delahiva in and like working like Delahiva into sit-up guard, Delahiva into Ashi. Do you have a leg program? Do you guys do leg locks?
So I'm split on this. So I tend to follow the IBJJF legal thing. So straight ankle lock for everybody, white belt and above, absolutely no heel hooking. And then I kept it, you know, knee bars at Brown and all. However, the grappling industries, are you familiar with that tournament?
Sure.
Yeah. So they have their own rule set and they started coming to town often and they were allowing toe holds, knee bars and everything at blue belt, which me personally, I don't agree with. I think it's still a little early in your jiu-jitsu career to have someone playing with your knees and like at our age, like knees.
Yeah.
You'll never get that back. It's realistic then. And I'm like, well, if my jiu-jitsu boils down to my ability to heel hook you or not, then I really missed the mark on everything else that was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do whatever is legal for competition. So I've got my blue belts who are playing with toe holds and knee bars now just because that's what local competition rules allow. And mm-hmm. I say it still uncomfortably. Like, and there are certain people I'm like, man, guys, I really wish you'd find another way, you know, like develop the rest of your game, please.
This is how our school works. So we have our guy, Matt Dolan, who we actually just call him Ashi, or we call him the Ashi kid because he loves the leg game and he's amazing at the leg game. So Thursday morning at our school is no gi leg day, straight ankle locks for everybody.
Right.
Great. But heel hooks, we haven't gone toe holds yet, but heel hooks and knee bars are a party that you have to be invited to.
100%.
And if you have not been invited to that party, and you might, you know, we might work them when we're drilling, you know, somebody will say, and here's where the heel hook is. And then he'll look at 3/4 of the class and say, don't do this unless you've been invited to this.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah. But just in terms of the open guard and the way that the different ways that you can use your legs instead of your hands and really, and then like I'm playing sit up guard a lot right now. And I'm working on sit-up guard. Man, that stuff's great. I love that stuff.
Absolutely. I remember, 2012 Worlds or whatever. I had just gotten my butt kicked as usual. I've never won Worlds ever. So my Instagram bio used to say 0-time world champion since everyone else has the actual number. It's not for not trying. You know, I've tried 6 times, but just didn't work out for me. But I remember being there and I went with a different mindset one year. Like, I'm just here to learn. And I remember watching Michelle Nicolini in the female black belt division and just play an amazing sit-up guard that no one had an answer to. And I remember going, that's going to be my thing when I get home.
Yeah.
Like that was something that I really want to play with. And I think the cool thing with jiu-jitsu is like, it has seasons and or phases to it. So like right now you're in a sit-up guard thing and you're just totally having a blast with it. And like,
yeah.
And in 6 months, you might be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to get involved in like some serious single leg X or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. We're rocking all that stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Yeah. It's great. And I love it. And it's stuff that and it's the kind of thing, you know, I think about like people who are just in their first year and maybe they're not in great shape and they start getting discouraged. Yes. And you just watch these people that are like a year or two and then their third year, and how their bodies change and how what they're able to do now compared to where they started. So much of why I started this Instagram, because jiu-jitsu has had such an impact on my life, and I really want people to try it if they're scared, and I want them to stick with it if they're frustrated. Yeah. Because it gets so much better, you know?
Absolutely. So I found your Instagram because my students started reposting it. So I'm like, okay, there's something to this. If like I got four or five people that are steadily like reposting to their story, let me check it out. And mm-hmm. One of my sleepless nights, which are usually six or seven nights a week where I just can't sleep, I'll scroll through the phone and I came across your content. And then I went from top to bottom, every post. I read every post, every caption, everything one night. And I was like, this guy gets it. So like, yeah, I'm going to follow. I'm going to recommend that my students buy Jiu-Jitsu University and then get on Instagram and follow the white belt Instagram. And like, these are because they're resources. And I think another thing that in martial arts is this weird ego stigma. And we all say that we leave our ego outside. No one leaves their ego outside. Like that's the biggest myth in martial arts. Like you bring an ounce of it, even at black belt or whatever, everyone brings a little bit of it inside. Like you might've left most in the car, but you brought a droplet or two in with you.
Uh-huh.
So one thing we don't do is a lot of us don't ask for help in an environment where we're paying to get help.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. And a lot of us don't let people know when we're on that ledge of, hey, I think I'm going to quit. So if you were a student of mine and you're like, hey, I want to quit. So you have to come in, you sign this little thing on the iPad, you're going to get billed for 60 more days. You attend all the classes in that 60 days. But that lets me know as an instructor, like, hey, I need to have a conversation with this person. I need to find out, is it, if it's something that we can't control, financial or time or whatever, those things are going to happen. Life is always going to get in the way of the things we love. That's how the universe turns.
Yeah. But
is it me? Is it the environment? Is there a particular student who's a bully? Is it, I'm just in a plateau right now and I feel like I'm never going to get out of it, because I've had those. We just talked about on our last podcast, I think I was in a 6-month plateau at brown belt where I just kept saying, I'm never going to become a black belt. I truly believed that. I felt it. Like I was watching everyone around me like pass by. And like, so that happens at all levels. And so for when I give you that 60-day notice, or you give me the notice, that means I need to try to pull you a little closer and figure out what is it that's making you walk away from probably one of the best decisions you've ever made in your life to become.
I know. And it's so hard to not feel salesy,
right?
Or
right.
To feel like you're, or like you're, or culty.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's so tricky, because at the end of the day, there's the business aspect, but
which I suck at.
You could do other things that would make you a lot more money and give you a much easier life.
I tell people all the time, I could go work at Home Depot and make more than I make right now and have a benefits package that came with it. So,
and get to work on your car and hang out with your girlfriend and her daughter.
Right. So like, I'm here because I love this and I love all of you. And, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know me from Adam or whatever, if you're in Boise, Idaho, come train. Like you.
Oh yeah. And we'll totally like Rain Jiu-Jitsu. The cool thing. So you said that your students were telling you about my white belt, but your students were like, you would love my coach. Like one in particular was like, I put out a thing saying,
Tom.
I think it was Tom. And that guy seems great. He reposts my stuff all the time. I'm like, thank you so much. And just
my girlfriend's big on your stuff too. That was the one that got me. Cause at first I was like, all right, who's this dude that she's checking out and sharing and whatever.
Wait, who's your girlfriend?
Her name is Ashley. And she's the co-host of my podcast. She's a blue belt. She follows and posts a lot of your stuff too.
And oh, cool.
Because our podcast is her and I, and it was supposed to be from the perspective of a white belt and a black belt, a female and a male. And just
I love it. That's great. Yeah. So,
and as it evolves, but yeah, I learned from her. I learned from Tom, if you and I continue talking, which I hope we do.
Oh yeah. This is great. I feel like we're on to something here. I feel like some cross-country trips. I love Idaho. Idaho is a beautiful state.
It is. So Idaho being landlocked, that's a struggle for me. because I feel like I draw certain levels of like personal happiness and even energy and power from the sun and the ocean. And I was just talking with Joseph Manuel, one of my teammates, and he's black belt under Hobson as well. He's a Choke Lab guy. I don't know if you follow Choke Lab on Instagram.
I just started following them.
Amazing. And he's not far from you. Like, go get a private lesson. He'll blow your mind. It's amazing.
Where is he?
He's in Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that's like a day drive. So yeah, go check him out. And just incredible, incredibly knowledgeable guy. But the one thing that him and I were talking about, we were at dinner. I said, you know, one of the best moments I had as an instructor was when I realized that I love jujitsu and it's my life and it's my career.
Mm-hmm.
And many of my students like jujitsu and it's their hobby and it's something they do 2 days a week. And I need to not put that on them. Like, where were you yesterday? You weren't here. You didn't like sooner or later, black belts, excuse me, apologize. Sooner or later, black belts have to just realize that not everyone is trying to live the jujitsu lifestyle. Some people mm-hmm. want to live the jujitsu hobby 2 hours a week.
Yeah.
And, because I'm very big in the, into judo as well. And I still try to stay relevant. So Shintaro Higashi is a well-known judo guy there in New York, out near your way. He's got a great school. And his podcast, he was talking about, we can't treat regular judo players as like subpar human beings and only favor the competitors or only favor the higher ranks or only favor the hardcore guys.
Yeah.
Like I've got one student who trains 1 day a month. He's never asked for a discount or whatever. He works, he's on the road and he trains 1 day a month. He pays the full pop. And that guy deserves the same amount of respect and attention and everything as the mat rat who doesn't go home and who's the first there. And just, that was the minute I made that shift in mindset, like it made me a happier person because like you and I talked, you've done a little bit of teaching with beginners there at your school.
Yeah. I run the beginner. I teach beginners Monday and Tuesday nights as a four stripe blue belt. But what that means is how to shrimp, how to bridge. This is what closed guard is. This is how, you know, this is what open guard is.
That's where it starts though. Like not just for them, but where it starts for you. Like as one day, it's like right now I'm a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt talking to a soon to be Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. And maybe soon.
You know, I'd like to get my purple belt first. Right, I think it's coming pretty soon, but I don't even know about that.
But that's the one thing.
All I know is I'm not quitting. Right. So that's all I know.
That's all there is to it. Hobson said once, he didn't really say it to me. He said to a room full of people I was in, he goes, every one of you will be a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt as long as you don't quit. Right. It's inevitable. Some of you will do it faster than others. Some of you will do it with a world championship title. Some of you will do a seminar or a DVD, but every one of you will be jiu-jitsu black belts. That's it. So I'm thinking right now, I'm sitting here as a black belt and I'm talking to someone who's just not there yet. It's not really a if, it's just a when. And every student needs to be treated that way too. You are cultivating next generations of black belts, even in your kids' program. You know, if you've got a kid who just completely won't pay attention, sit still, he's actually licking the wall pad while he's supposed to be, know, believe it or not, the wall pad licker kid could be a black belt, right? Like, so everyone has to be invested in. And even the people who it's just their hobby. I met this black belt years ago when I was teaching in Sacramento and I was a brown belt and he came into my school. He was a black belt and he was an ER nurse. And I can't remember his name. He's a friend of mine's next door neighbor. And he was like, yeah, I'm a black belt. I'm like, you don't train? He's like, not really. And I mean, like in the garage here and there, but like, and I was skeptic because I had never met a black belt who didn't really like actively train. And then this guy pulled this black belt out that was all crusty and, you know, beat to crap and this old Atama gi. So I knew he was for real because I haven't even seen anyone sell an Atama gi in at least 10 or 15 years. So that's an older brand. And then me and this guy just started rolling and playing around. And like, he gave me some cool advice and things. And I started playing. It's funny because you and I were talking reverse De La Hiva. I started playing reverse De La Hiva and he's like, oh, that's cool. Show me how you did that. And it was a mutual respect. He was a black belt in my school. I was a brown belt. We were able to exchange information. And there's a guy who he loves jiu-jitsu, but he's also got kids and a career and coaches baseball and does these other things. And so like, he's not any less of a black belt than I am right now just because he's not in an academy all the time. He's still very much a black belt. Mm. Just there's levels to everything. And so you got to treat everybody the same.
I completely agree. And there's definitely a temptation to like have some judgment around that stuff, especially if you have like really like thrown yourself into this and have completely given yourself over to it. But you don't want to be like, you know, I was raised very religious. I was a youth pastor and like, you know, had a lot of that in my background. And I don't want to be like the pushy religious person who is like, you know, accept jujitsu as your savior and everything's going to be okay.
It's hard, especially when you're new. I think white belts are the worst about it. It's like the CrossFitters who like, all they want to do is tell you how great CrossFit is, or how many people do you think you annoyed when you were new at jujitsu? Your coworkers, your neighbors, your family members, you know, I found the best way to get your friends to come do jujitsu is not to keep asking them to come. It's to ask them to come once, maybe twice. And then every now and then in conversation, be like, oh man, we learned this cool thing the other day. And then when I really wanted to get people to come, I'd be like, hey, you know what? It's probably not for you anyway. And I would leave it at that.
Yeah, that's good reverse. That's, you know, good reverse. That's
really, like, what do you mean it's not? Well, if it's for you, you know, it's got to be for me. But yeah, if you just ask people all the time, they get burnt out on it.
You are a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. What do you secretly still struggle with in terms of your game? What do you still find elusive?
I'm going to give you the white belt answer.
Oh, come on. For real?
That's what, every time I ask a white belt, like, hey, what do you need work on? They always say all of it. And you know what? I am a firm believer in that the black belt should keep a white belt mind. All of it. Every part of my game can be tweaked. I'll be honest. Like, you give me a 200-pound blue belt who understands connection or pressure, I don't want to be in his side control. I really don't. It's not fun for me. Like, ribs hurt. I've been doing this since I was 4 years old. So everything's been broken once, you know, like I get out of bed and tap to the first steps in the morning. So I don't want to, I'd rather you have my back. Like, I feel more confident there than I do with you having me in side control. So, but really what part of my game, okay, all of it, like, and never stop wanting to improve all of it.
So now any of your students that are listening to your professor, to that 240-pound, 6'5" white belt, get on Shane. Get him in side control. Say, hey, professor, can we fight from side control
and
today?
And I'll just do see it. I'll groan. But I'm like, do I get to start with an underhook at least? Like, can I have
something? No, you get nothing. You're a black belt. You get nothing.
That's usually the answer I get to.
Professor Shane Mount, thanks so much for being here today, man. This was great.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was awesome. I'm so happy to see the Instagram evolve into a podcast. I'm always looking for good podcasts to check out. And we definitely have to get you on ours. And just keep doing what you're doing, because what you're doing for the jiu-jitsu community is huge. There are a lot of people out there who can't talk to their training partners, or who have thoughts of quitting or whatever, that they think they're the only one. So you're, as a black belt, I look forward to your daily posts because they speak to me too.
Okay, so thanks again for listening. That was Shane Mount from Rain Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Boise, Idaho. We'll put his links in the show notes so you can get in on his podcast and keep up with what he's doing on Instagram. Thanks so much for listening. I'm still getting better at editing and recording and doing all of the things that go with the production end of this. As I said during our first episode, still very much a white belt. It's going to be a while before I get my first stripe at podcasting, but I hope that you will like this episode, that you will share it, that you'll subscribe, that you'll do all those things that podcasters ask you to do. We'll see you on the Instagram, and we'll see you next week for episode number 3.